Welcome to Advisor Radio from Horse's Mouth. I'm Sean Bailey, Editor-in-Chief, and today we're talking with Charles Sherry, author of our weekly Advisor Talking Points column. Charles, welcome back, and let's jump right in. Well, there was a lot of talk this week about high-frequency trading in Michael Lewis's new book, Flash Boys. We'll get to that in a minute, but your first item is about Janet Yellen again. She's trying hard to be understood, it seems. Is it working?
Well, it's really quite interesting because you go back, you go back to the Fed meeting a couple of weeks back, and you got a Federal Reserve that's really bent on gradually winding down QE. And their goal was to have stop the bond buys by the end of the year. And then we got this surprise or somewhat surprise comment, possibly inadvertently, that we might see our first rate hike sometime next spring or late in the spring. It's a heavily qualified comment, but it temporarily caught the markets off guard. As I've said, you start to look at the Federal Reserve projections and where interest rates are going to be. A rate hike sometime in the middle of next year seems to be the odds on favorite, assuming we continue to see at least moderate or modest growth. Then we get this speech on Monday from Janet Yellen that was really, in a way, it was a very dovish speech. It's vintage Janet Yellen. It's what we have seen from her, her comments and her statements over the last few years, because she has been a proponent of QE. She has been a proponent of a dovish policy. She doesn't believe inflation was going to pick up, and we needed to put that monetary pedal to the metal to do as much as we can, or I should say as much as the Federal Reserve can do, to get the economy moving. So she comes out with this speech on Monday, and she spent an inordinate amount of time talking about the labor market and all the slack in the labor market. And she defines slack as cyclical. You have these qualified workers, you have too many qualified workers, but not enough jobs in an economy that, if it were growing fast enough, could employ those qualified workers. That's versus structural unemployment in a situation maybe where the labor force isn't growing as fast because you've got the baby boomers that are retiring, or the economy has changed so much, Sean, that you've got, say, for example, these unemployed project managers and accountants, but you've got all these biotech jobs that are begging. She sees it as cyclical, and if it's cyclical, she believes that monetary policy can have an impact by encouraging consumers and businesses to spend, create faster economic growth, which is going to employ some of those individuals. And she listed five different reasons, and I'll cover them very quickly. You're looking at you've got 7 million people who are working part-time that want full-time. That's higher than you'd be expected for a jobless rate that sits at 6.7%. We're not seeing wage growth. We have a large share of unemployed who've been out of work for 6 months or more. You've got quit rates that are low, below what we saw in the last recession. I mean, if you think about it, if you don't like your job and you don't think you can find comparable employment, less likely to quit. And of course, she talked a bit about the labor force participation rate. I think what this means for clients who are looking for higher rates, who in the past had come to depend upon more normal interest rates, we're not going to see that anytime soon. Even if the Fed does begin to raise rates sometime in the middle of next year, it could be gradual increases, and it could be quite a while before we see normal interest rates in the economy. Again, it's the Fed using monetary policy to try to stimulate growth. Success so far, of course, has been quite mixed.
Right. Okay, so, item number two, Michael Lewis says the stock market is rigged. I got a lot of people clucking this week. What's your take on how to respond to clients' questions about this sort of thing?
Well, first, rigged, I think, is a bit strong. When I think of rigged, and maybe a lot of advisors and clients would think this way, if you were to go into, say, for example, a casino and there are those electronic poker machines, those electronic I'm losing my train of thought here.
But we know one-armed bandits and all that stuff.
One-armed bandits, there you go. You've got that, and that computer chip has already been biased towards the house. probably not going to want to play. Rigs suggest you can't win the game or you can't make money. Right now, if the stock market is rigged, it's rigged at an all-time high. I think when you're going to present this to clients, and I'm not going to get into some of the. I talked a little bit about the details here within the report itself. I hit some of the high level, and I don't pretend to know all the intricacies or the architecture of trading. I think very few people do. But when you're talking to clients about this, if by chance you did pay $49.50 for a stock that maybe you could have got for $49.49.5, and that stock is trading at 80, or you're looking long term, is a half a cent really that big of a deal? You're looking at, go back, let's say, 20 plus years or so. We used to trade in quarter points. We used to trade in eighths. If you wanted to buy just, say, 100 shares, you're looking at a full service commission that runs you over $100. Today, trades are $6, $7, $8, and we're trading in pennies. Yeah, I think it's something that probably needs to be looked at. And I also recognize not everybody's going to agree with my position on this, because it is a very emotional issue. The thought that someone's front running, buying it first and selling it to me at a slightly higher price. But again, ask yourself, if you know what you know today about high frequency trading, would you have cashed out of the market in 2010 or 2011? Again, keep your focus on the long term with these buy and hold strategies, and most advisors tend to have a longer term focus.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. I think most of the advisors who weighed in on this when we had a discussion about it on Horse's Mouth yesterday, most of them are against it because they do view it as front running, and it's just like, I think the bigger issue is, yet another body blow to the whole notion of having trust in the marketplace. And, we could probably go on for hours just listing any variety of ongoing or recently completed investigations about various aspects of the market. And, it's head spinning and disheartening at a certain level. But like you say, it is the only game right now. And, would you have made the decision to get out of the market just because you knew that there was, high-frequency trading going on? I don't think so.
I like the way you say that, body blow, because it is another black eye. The public just is very suspicious of Wall Street. And this isn't like the 1990s when Wall Street was a hero and all of our business leaders were heroes. Things have changed with the choppiness in the economy and the stock market. But it seems like something like this crops up every 18 or 24 months. And now we're probably going to see this. This story has legs. The Justice Department's looking at it. You know this is going to continue on the front pages, and it's just another – it's not a bad press for the market. Maybe longer term, it's good that we're having this debate. It's getting it out in the public. But when you look at the markets, they are fairly transparent, especially when we compare to the past. You're not paying 12.5 cents or 25 cents spread on the stocks. You're not paying the higher commissions. All taken together, if you're in it for the long term, you're buying at a particular level with a very diversified portfolio as a way to create wealth, accumulate wealth over the longer term. And historically, that has been the case for stocks. And it's one way to kind of present it to clients to kind of, take some of the, anger that maybe some of your clients are feeling right now, and they feel that maybe they saw the headline and they're being cheated.
Yeah, right. I think the other issue is that, the Wall Street Journal pointed out in an editorial yesterday that Schneiderman, the Attorney General in New York, is investigating, and they were suggesting that if he is investigating that, the regulators really need to be taking the task on this particular issue as much as anybody else. And, I think this just, goes to show, again, the SEC has looked at it. They gave a $5 million fine to the New York Stock Exchange for doing this, but then nothing else developed after that. And, people look at that and it's like, wait, what's going on? The SEC is supposed to be on top of this, and instead they just wrote the smallest of parking tickets and then just attempted to say nothing's here, just move on, nothing happening. And, of course, that isn't the case. We know the exchanges themselves are making a lot of money by charging those high-frequency traders for access to that information. So it just goes to, you know, some, you know, fundamental levels of, you know, unsavoriness there.
You start to dig under the surface, you can probably find all kinds of things in all kinds of industries. We do want confidence in our markets. Confidence is almost the bedrock or the cornerstone of what our financial markets are built
on.
If there's not that confidence there, and that's why we have a number of regulations in place in order to force honesty to make sure that things are transparent, and we do have that level of confidence. And it's something that's always going to be tweaked, and there are some thoughts out there the regulators are maybe too strong. I mean, advisors who have dealt with various compliance groups would argue that might be the case. And we're talking personal conversations I've had with advisors. Sometimes regulators are coming down too strong what they're trying to do because they don't quite understand the industry. And that's a whole different argument.
Right.
But I think right now when you look at U.S. markets and you start comparing markets around the world, we're some of the most transparent. And that breeds confidence, and it breeds not only participation by U.S. investors, but by foreign investors also.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the you know, the emphasis of the regulators is always on the little guys, the guys who we work with here at Horse's Mouth, and there's never any serious action for the bigger players, the exchanges and the firms and that sort of thing. So it's very. It's a difficult situation for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And as you say, the trust issue is big, and, there's plenty of evidence that shows that investors have, you know, shied away from the market. And if you look at the total volume, if you pulled out all the high-frequency trading volume, it would be really interesting to see, you know, what the level of participation actually has been even during this bull market compared to years past. And I don't know the data specifically, but I do think it would be a little surprising.
I think you might be right. In fact, I'm not even sure if even the data is available. It says high-frequency trading and hedge funds have become an increasingly large role in buying. Exactly. What would it be if we could actually compare apples to apples 2002 to 2014 or 1990 to 2014?
Right.
Of course, now you've got ETFs, and there's just so much. It's a different
animal. Yeah, a lot of data. The market has been it's totally evolved into something that's not necessarily that recognizable. But
No, it's not. And I know we're on this a while, but, you know, a lot of orders are no longer routed to the NYSE as they might have been in the past. So there's another, you know, you're not comparing apples to apples anymore as you might have even over the last 10 years.
Yep. Okay. Item number three, Europe. ECB kept its rates low still. Is there anything else to say about what's going on over in Europe?
Well, I believe the European Central Bank remains behind the curve, and that's why I entitled this. They're playing with fire. You've got an inflation rate now that's sitting at a year over year at 0.5%, and it continues to drop. You got a very dovish statement and a dovish press conference from ECB President Mario Draghi. They're looking at unconventional measures that was discussed in their meeting. QE was explicitly mentioned. It's how they want to possibly implement that. But again, rates were unchanged, 0.25% on their main rate. Their deposit rate was held at zero. They did not go negative. There was talk that that might happen as a way to encourage lending. One of the things right now is the euro has been fairly strong. Part of that has to do with they've got a large current account surplus. A stronger euro lowers the price of imported goods. But you don't want to fall into a situation like Japan. We've seen what's happening over there. But the broader picture is the European European banking system is broken. It's undercapitalized. They're not making the loans. I put some lending data within the report itself, and it seems it's difficult to imagine how the economy in Europe could really gain some traction without a pickup in bank lending. Unlike the United States, we have all kinds of ways to get access to credit. I mean, I can, you know, whether it's Caterpillar, John Deere, GM, Best Buy, Target, you know, you got companies that will finance you. And Mario Draghi's talked about that. Over there, they're much more dependent upon their banking system as to intermediate funds between, you know, those who want to lend and those who want to borrow. But I suspect they will eventually, they're probably leaning to some type of measures with inflation so low. If and when that happens, that's more liquidity in the system. It's likely to become a tailwind, not just to Europe, but probably for U.S. equities. So it's something to kind of keep an eye on as we go forward.
Yeah, you know, I am also on the issue of Europe, you know, reflecting back on where we were. Was it a year ago? 18 months ago?
Mm-hmm. Where, there was a recession about a year to 18 months ago in Europe.
And,
light one.
Yeah,
it was a long
right.
one.
But and there was, you know, a lot of discussion of the end of the euro, and there was the Greece thing, and, you know, and I guess they have successfully weathered that. Draghi, I guess, made it clear that there was no way that the euro was not going to be defended in whatever way it needed to be defended. And it seems like they've, you know, I mean, Soros was calling for the breakup of predicting that it was going to happen. It didn't happen.
Didn't happen.
So it hasn't happened yet, I guess, really, probably the way to say it on these things. But,
well,
yeah.
It's interesting you bring that up because it was not only European politicians but the European Central Bank itself that were able to craft headlines, put together programs, buy some time, get past the hump, bring back confidence. We talked a little bit about that before. The European Central Bank promises of action, especially to buy bonds of some of the peripheral or troubled countries in Europe. That was enough to bring investors back in. Again, confidence. It is a cornerstone. It is the cornerstone of the financial system, and
right.
they were able to at least buttress confidence, support confidence, I should say, and bring those investors back. Just this morning, when I was preparing, I've got you know the financial news channel in the background, and I heard a comment that the yield on Spain's 5-year bond is now below the yield on the equivalent in the U.S. And we have been seeing yields in some of these countries like Spain and Italy come down over the last few months. And that's also a sign that, you know, although the euro is sick, it's surviving.
Yeah, yeah.
I shouldn't even say the euro. I should say the eurozone because the euro itself and the currency itself has actually been creeping higher in value.
Right.
That's one of the headwinds that the European Central Bank is fighting.
Yeah. I also thought it was interesting yesterday, I believe I saw that Germany had passed its first minimum wage law. I'm not entirely sure, but I'm pretty sure I heard that that's what they were doing. Thought that was kind of interesting.
That is interesting because you think of Europe and the tight labor laws, and, of course, a lot of countries have minimum wages. We've had ours since the 1930s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was surprised to see that. But anyway, okay, so the week ahead, what do we have to look forward to?
It's going to be fairly light on the economic calendar this upcoming week. I think the thing that I want to probably want to look more at is the minutes from the last Fed meeting. There's that one statement that was in there that talked about the need to have below normal rates for at least some time, even after we're at full employment. Now, you kind of think about that. We're at full employment. Why would we need to have below normal rates? Maybe it's just simple as the economy has been so scarred by the sharp recession and the financial crisis. You would think that might create some inflation. So I would kind of like to see a little bit of color, a little bit of commentary behind that thought. What's the Fed's thinking? And again, but from an investor standpoint, those who are looking to earn a more acceptable rate of return on things like their savings accounts, money markets, CDs, it's just you're waiting a little bit longer. To balance that out, and Janet Yellen made this comment in her testimony back in February, she remarked, yeah, rates are low, but we're also benefiting from a higher stock market, so there's a little bit of balance here. Yet I do understand that obviously the need for an acceptable level of income from those who have become used to earning, you know, 3%, 4%, 5% on various safe investments. That disappeared, of course, in the 2008 financial crisis. Other things maybe looking forward, and I spent some more time on this last week, but first quarter earnings season kicks off next week. Alcoa has always traditionally been the unofficial kickoff. We're seeing it when you look at the pre-announcements, it's like the movie Groundhog's Day right now, Sean. We're getting a number of downgrades versus upgrades from the various companies. They're cutting their guidance. But we're not getting large cuts. We're just seeing a lot of cuts. And when you think about it, it appears, once again, they're managing expectations. It's that under-promise. It's that over-delivery that they're trying to give us. We've seen that for the last several quarters. It's just unusually negative right now. I think the one new variable, the one new ingredient that we're seeing thrown into the equation, of course, is this rough winter. How is that going to affect earnings? At the same time, it's a one-time event. So let's keep an eye on what kind of guidance the companies are giving. Should be sending out.
Right. Good. Thanks, Charles. We'll talk to you next week.
You bet.
You've been listening to Charles Sherry, author of Horse's Mouth's weekly advisor talking points column. You can read it every Friday on Horse's Mouth. Charles also offers advisors market commentaries to use in newsletters and blogs. And you'll learn more about that at www.financialjumble.com. My name is Sean Bailey, editor-in-chief at Horse's Mouth. Thanks for listening.
This Horse's Mouth presentation is offered specifically for financial advisors and may not be reproduced, broadcast, or distributed without permission from Horse's Mouth. Unauthorized use, reproduction, or distribution of this material is a violation of federal law and punishable by civil and criminal penalties.